Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. The Pennsylvania primary is Tuesday, April 26th. We continue our series of conversations with the Democratic candidates vying for a chance to face off against incumbent Republican Senator Pat Toomey in November. Who are the candidates? What do they stand for? And who has the best chance of going all the way? Last week, we talked with Congressman Joe Sestak. Today, we talk with Katie McGinty, who left her post as Governor Wolf's chief of staff in July. McGinty ran unsuccessfully for governor in 2014 and served as secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection under Governor Ed Rendell. Previously, she served as chair of the White House Council on Environmental Quality under Bill Clinton, the first woman in that role. Between government positions, she served on the board of directors of several energy-related firms. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Patty.
Why are you running for the U.S. Senate? What got you into this race?
Well, Patty, I'm fortunate to have come from a big, loud Irish family in Northeast Philadelphia, first in my family to go to four-year college. But, you know, I had a chance at that American dream. As you said, as a relatively young person, I became a senior advisor to the President of the United States. And from there, I've had the chance to build good businesses in renewable energy, energy efficiency, and serve our country in protecting the environment. You know, every young person should have that same opportunity to develop their gifts, to discover who and what they are, and to be able to realize any dream they set out to achieve. But for too many families, it's just not true anymore. And I want to get in there and have the back of those hardworking men and women who've been the backbone of our communities.
Your environmental credentials, as I mentioned just a moment ago, are well established. But skeptics say the way you moved between the public and private sector puts your resume under a cloud. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know what, Patty? I'm the only person in this race who's actually been in the arena fighting my entire career to protect public health, to protect the environment. And I'm proud to say, when I was Secretary of Environmental Protection, we had literally award-winning progress here on the environment. By the end of my tenure, we were among the top states in the entire country in wind energy jobs. We were number three in the country in solar energy jobs. We also had some of the toughest regulations in cutting toxic mercury pollution, for example, from coal-fired power plants. And here's the big thing. The myth is that you have to choose between jobs and the environment. When I've been in government, I've driven an agenda that has been nation-leading in protecting the environment. And when I've had the privilege of serving in the private sector, I've driven businesses that are good for the environment while creating jobs at the same time. That is what I believe we have to do. Look at Flint, Michigan, for example. How much better would it have been to put people to work tearing out those old lead pipes so that we had clean water and we had an economy that would thrive with modern infrastructure?
You and your challengers in this Democratic race are very similar on lots of different issues, but when it comes to fracking, there is a distinct difference. You say fracking is, quote, the special sauce of economic growth. Congressman Sestak says, and so does John Fetterman, both believe that there should be a moratorium on fracking until sufficient staffing is provided, is available to provide proper oversight, and until the industry pays a severance tax. Explain your position on fracking and why you differ.
Well, actually, Patty, I have to say, I have been 100% consistent on this issue. When it comes to fracking, we have to regulate it, we have to zone it, we have to tax it. Now, my fellows in this primary have had a little bit of a election changing of position here. But we'll leave that aside for a second. Here's the critical thing. Again, I am the only person in this race who's actually gone toe-to-toe with the energy industry. In the first days of serving as the governor's chief of staff, we made it happen, put in place a ban on fracking in our state parks and forests. We took the biggest enforcement action ever against a fracking company, and we got going on what will be some of the toughest regulations in the country with respect to fracking companies. That's a track record that no one else has. I'm proud of it. I know how to get the job done. Key thing is we need a strong environmental cop on the beat, and that's what I have ensured in government and will ensure as when I serve as the United States Senator for Pennsylvania. And I guess I'd also just say it's a very proud moment for me to be the candidate in this campaign that has received the 100% endorsement of the key and leading environmental organizations in this country, with the League of Conservation Voters, for example, saying that I'm the only person in this race who's literally dedicated my entire career to fighting climate change and building a clean energy economy.
Speaking of climate change, what actions would you take to address climate change? And is the Paris Agreement enough?
Well, the Paris Agreement is a good starting point, and it represents an important coming together of the world. And I think it underscores how out of touch a Pat Toomey is, for example, in questioning the science of climate change. You know, I was a chemist and have been involved in the science and public policy around climate change for a long, long time. In fact, when I worked with then Senator Al Gore, we were involved with organizing the very first hearings on Capitol Hill on climate change. Bottom line is this: the science is in. Paris helps to make clear that the world agrees to that. But where our opportunity lies is in being a leader in tackling this challenge. And here's what I think we can do. We can put people to work building a smart grid. Our electric grid is old, it's antiquated. We need to upgrade it. When we do, we can also be a premier leader in renewable energy, in energy efficiency. That creates good jobs. That cuts people's electric bills. That takes the pollution out of the air. It's a win-win strategy, and Pennsylvania ought to lead it. And as United States Senator, I'd work hard to make sure we do.
Give us one or two concrete ideas for growing jobs in Pennsylvania and the country.
Sure. Listen, I think that we most certainly can get back into the business of making things again. You know, I don't buy for 1 minute that manufacturing is about cheap labor. It's about skilled labor combined with technology. You know, Pennsylvania is one of the number one states in the entire country in things like robotics, 3D printing, laser printing. You put a skilled workforce together with that technology, and we can and we should capture those good manufacturing jobs back again. Second idea that I talk about everywhere I go is in infrastructure. How about it? Let's put people to work to make sure we've got modern clean water infrastructure. We've got modern electrical infrastructure, that our roads and bridges are safe. They are not today. They are degraded. They're in disrepair. But it's good jobs that we can put people to work in rebuilding that infrastructure that provides the foundation for rich and robust economic growth.
The federal government raised the federal minimum wage back in 2009 in a three-step process. The current rate is $7.25 per hour. As you know, there's a renewed push to raise the minimum wage again, with unions asking for $15 an hour and President Obama looking at a more moderate $10.10 an hour. Should we raise the federal minimum wage again? And if so, what to?
Well, I've been on the cutting edge of this issue with other good people fighting for a significant increase in the minimum wage. And I think it's essential for a couple of reasons. First, we need to reward hard work in this country. We have people out there now, they're working two jobs, they're working three jobs, and they just can't get ahead. It's not right to them. It's not right to their families. That backbreaking work is not properly rewarded. You know, I think most people would agree that anyone working 40 hours a week or more in this country shouldn't be living in poverty. But second, it's the economically smart thing for us to do. You know, Patty, 70% of our economic growth and vitality is all consumer driven. When we put more money in the pockets of consumers, they go out there and they are an engine that drives the economy. It's the right thing to do. It's the smart thing to do. I want to see us rewarding hard work, and I'm proud to be part of that fight for 15.
As you well know, Senator Toomey would like to repeal the Affordable Care Act. In your opinion, how well is the Affordable Care Act serving Americans, and what, if any, changes do you think are needed to make it work even better?
Well, let's just take one major piece of the Affordable Care Act. When I was working with Governor Wolf, we drove forward and we expanded Medicaid as provided for under the Affordable Care Act. What did that do? Well, in one fell swoop, we made it so that now 600,000 Pennsylvanians have health insurance, have the health care they need. Again, the right thing to do, but also the smart thing to do because it saves taxpayers $500 million a year when people have proper health care and don't have to use the emergency room as their primary care doctor. Pat Toomey is 100% wrong on this in trying to take that health care and those cost savings away from taxpayers. Second, what we need to continue to do, though, is drive the costs of health care down. And it is nothing short of outrageous that we're the only country in the world that does not allow our major health systems to negotiate with the big pharmaceutical companies to try to bring the costs of drugs down. You know, we pay vastly more for the very same medications here in the United States than anywhere else in the world. That's wrong. We should change it. My fear is that a Pat Toomey is too much compromised being in the pocket of some of these big companies that he won't call this one fair and straight and have the back of taxpayers and those who need to be able to afford those prescription drugs.
You mentioned just a moment ago your work with Governor Wolf as his chief of staff, and I'm wondering how that experience prepared you for this role as a U.S. senator.
Well, first, it was just a joy and honor to work with Governor Wolf. You know, we like to think about it as our own mini Abraham Lincoln team of rivals, where we went against each other in the primary, and then I joined forces with him. Look, we tackled all kinds of incredibly important issues that also have a federal component. You know, I got it done with the governor in expanding Medicaid. We need to tackle health care issues also at the federal level. We got it done in breaking a logjam around a fair funding formula for our schools. Now, that's critically important because, you know, a child's future should not be determined by their zip code of where they live. And every child should have access to a good school and good quality education. That's a passion I have as a mom. I have three teenage girls, and they've spent much of their schooling in public schools, and I know how vital it is that we offer a good educational experience for our kids. We did that firsthand as I worked with the governor. I'll do that and tackle those important issues firsthand in Washington as well.
You mentioned logjam, and no Pennsylvanian is unaware of the fact that Pennsylvania is 8 months into a state budget impasse. Convince voters, if you would, that you would be able to work across the aisle, and specifically, what issues will you extend yourself on, and are there any Republican senators with whom you think you can work cooperatively?
Well, one of the things that has been energizing to me in my career is, in fact, finding that common ground with the disparate points of view. You know, it was with a Republican legislature when I was Secretary of Environmental Protection. I found the common ground, and we got critical legislation done, legislation that put $1 billion plus into key programs like Growing Greener that enables us to clean up our rivers and streams. Similarly, when I worked in the White House, you know, it was during the Newt Gingrich revolution. And Newt Gingrich didn't think that he was going to support any new environmental legislation. But, you know, I rolled up my sleeves. I worked with him. I worked with Republicans in the House and Senate. And by the end of just a couple of years, we had historic new safe drinking water legislation that we got done, food quality protection legislation. And we changed the game in terms of public health and how we take into account children and sensitive populations when we're deciding if a chemical is safe. We got that done even after the Gingrich Revolution, and I was proud to be part of driving forward and finding that common ground so that we could tackle real and substantial problems.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia, and our guest is Katie McGinty, former Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection under Ed Rendell. Previously, she served as Chair of the White House Council on Environmental Quality under Bill Clinton. Most recently, she was Chief of Staff for Governor Tom Wolf. She actually ran against him, but dropped out in fourth place. Can McGinty beat Toomey in November? And what distinguishes her from her Democratic challengers? Last week, we talked with Congressman Joe Sestak. In the coming weeks, we'll also talk one-on-one with Braddock Mayor John Fetterman and small business owner Joe Vodvarka. All of the candidate interviews will be posted to our website. You mentioned just a moment ago food quality, and I'm wondering if you would support labeling of genetically modified food.
You know, Patty, I do. Look, it's a democracy, and I think providing information so that people can be informed is the right thing to do. We need to make sure that the information itself is accurate, it's thorough, but I do think consumers deserve and have a right to know, and we should provide that information.
I'd like to move for a minute to national security issues. It's been 13 years since President George W. Bush sent troops into Iraq. Under what circumstances, I wonder, would you send ground troops to fight ISIS in Syria? And if not ground troops, what do you think is the best strategy for defeating ISIS?
Well, I do think we have to be very clear. When it comes to ISIS, we need to be in the mode of defeat and destroy. ISIS obviously intends and has executed incredible evil around the world and in our own backyard. What would I do? I do not think that U.S. ground troops are the answer. I do not think that would prove to be an effective strategy. However, we have had success when we've used our air power together with our special operations forces supporting Sunni and Arab troops on the ground, whether it's Sinjar, Ramadi. These are places where we have grabbed territory back from ISIS. You know, we need to go further than that, too. And some other priorities would include having our coalition partners have some real skin in the game with equipment, with intelligence, with their own air power, and also making sure that we are cutting off the lifeblood of ISIS, cutting off the financing to ISIS, cutting off their access to assets like oil that continue to generate revenues for ISIS. And, you know, here I just have very stark differences with Senator Pat Toomey. He supported the Iraq war, number one. Number two, he and other senators have done absolutely nothing for a year and a half as President Obama has asked for essentially a declaration of war against ISIS. He and other senators have sat on their hands while the expert in this country that the president has nominated to be that assistant secretary in our treasury going after terror financing, they've sat on their hands instead of moving immediately to confirm that gentleman. But to top it all, just a few weeks ago, Senator Toomey was also one of those who actually voted against closing the terror loophole when it comes to guns. So if you're on a FBI watch list here as a suspected terrorist, you can't fly on a plane, but under U.S. law currently, you can buy a gun. That's wrong. I would vote and work to close that loophole and get about real measures that really protect the people of this country.
Speaking of protecting the American public, Senator Toomey says that the risk of a terrorist coming into the country, posing as a refugee, is too great. And he has called on Congress to suspend any resettlement here, saying that the vetting process is just too unreliable. Of course, this is something that's resonating with lots of Americans, as evidenced by the popularity of Donald Trump. What's your position on accepting Syrian refugees into the country or into the state?
Well, let me just say, in terms of Senator Toomey's sentences there, I think he's got some explaining to do, because he actually voted against the budget legislation that included critically important provisions that closed what was called the visa waiver loophole. That was a loophole that previously would have allowed people who had been in Syria, had been in Iraq, to come into this country without even the scrutiny of a visa, and yet he voted against that. Look, I think we need to put a top priority on protecting our citizens, and I think we can do that even as we are true to our heritage and our tradition of accepting into this country those who are fleeing oppression. And the key significance there is that we drive forward in ensuring that the current 18 to 24-month review process, if it needs to be longer, make it longer, making sure that we're doing a thorough job. But I think we can reconcile and uphold both of those values. But what we can't do is vote against key legislation, as Senator Toomey did, that would close loopholes that do threaten American security.
Again, on this issue of security, there are currently 340 sanctuary cities in the United States, including in your hometown of Philadelphia. These are state and local jurisdictions that don't cooperate with federal immigration enforcement efforts. And as you know, there's growing pressure to abolish them. If more states banned sanctuary cities, would America, in your opinion, be better off or not?
Well, listen, I think sometimes these labels and buzzwords are very divisive and unnecessarily so. You know, sanctuary cities would somehow suggest that local police forces and local law enforcement are somehow encouraging a violation of law. And I think nothing more to the contrary is actually happening. Look, federal government should not be handing off its own responsibilities to local police forces that are already stretched. As a senator, I would invest to make sure at the federal government there are sufficient resources so that the federal law enforcement can do their job. And let's reinvest in things like the COPS program that has been cut so that local law enforcement can also do their job and do it effectively.
You began the beginning of the program by talking about the opportunities you had to be the first person in your family to attend college. You earned a degree in chemistry, later a law degree from Columbia University, and this with a father who is on the police force in Philadelphia and a mother who raised, as you said, 10 children and worked as a restaurant hostess. So I come to this question about getting a good education for Americans today. Over the past three decades, the average tuition at a public four-year college has more than tripled, with a typical family's income barely budging. And of course, the result of this is skyrocketing student debt. How can we make college affordable for all?
Well, Patty, you're really hitting on an issue that I think is beginning to reach crisis proportions. As I travel around the Commonwealth, I will tell you, I certainly speak to students who are so concerned that they will never climb themselves out of debt. But it's going further now. Parents are sharing with me that they've tried to pick up some of the burden for their kids, and they're taking out these Parents Plus and other loans that's miring them in debt, beginning to erode any savings they might have for their retirement. And just a week or two ago, I found myself with grandparents who are now also part of the mix, trying to help a grandchild have a shot of getting out from under an incredibly burdensome college debt. I mean, some of these kids literally are leaving school with $150,000, $180,000 in debt. What can we do? Well, one, I would sit down with the colleges and universities and see how we can dial the cost down. What can they do by way of greater efficiencies? What can they do to make sure that every dollar is being expended properly? I do think it is concerning that the cost of college has gone up sometimes 6%, 7% a year at a time when we haven't seen inflation. So that is something. Let's bring the costs under control. But then I would also be a force. Unlike Senator Toomey, I would have been a yes vote on the budget that included critical tax credits for middle-class families to enable them to afford college. I would have been a yes vote in supporting the Pell Grant program. You know, that program supports 250,000 students in Pennsylvania alone. We've got to do that. And then let's be smart. When interest rates are low, let's enable families to refinance student debt, just as you would refinance your mortgage. Those are some key and critical things we can do. I think there's bipartisan support for moving forward, and I would be part of moving that agenda forward.
The GOP and Senator Toomey specifically is trying to deny President Obama his constitutional right to appoint a replacement for the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. But whether Congress will cooperate with President Obama or not remains to be seen. However, the next president will no doubt be choosing federal judges and very likely a Supreme Court justice or perhaps two. U.S. senators play an important role in providing advice and consent in those matters. So I wonder, what do you consider necessary qualities for a federal judge?
Well, first, let me just say that I do think it is outrageous and flies right in the face of the specific language of the Constitution that says senators shall advise and consent on nominees that the president sends. I do hope that Senator Toomey will reconsider, decide to do his job. There's so many issues that are in the balance right now on women's health choices, whether the right to choose will be upheld. As a United States senator, when I would be looking at potential judicial nominees, I would really make sure that they understand that the Constitution includes a right to privacy, and that right to privacy includes a woman's right to choose. I'd want to make sure they understand that a clean and healthy environment is part of that life that we are that we pursue here in the United States. I'd want to make sure they understand that the Constitution includes a right of association that itself supports the right to organize and collectively bargain. The vital issues that are at stake mean that this should not be an area that's about politics. It should be about principle. It should be about the law. And it should be about the values that we hold dear. That's what I would be looking for in any judicial nominee.
Why do you think that you are the right candidate? And why do you think that you can beat Senator Pat Toomey in November?
Well, you know, I am just very pleased in this campaign, the breadth, the depth, and the diversity of individuals and organizations that have come out to support me in this effort. You know, we're going to need a team. We're going to need a big team to be able to take on Pat Toomey and to win. And I'm thrilled that leading environmental organizations in this Commonwealth and the country have gotten behind me in this effort, as well as organizations that are about manufacturing jobs and labor, our nurses, our teachers. They've all rallied behind me. And I think that kind of diverse coalition that hears and sees the vision that I'm bringing into this race, that we are going to grow our economy again and in a way that's dignified for anybody willing to work hard, and that our kids are going to have a good education again. I think we've got the team, I think we've got the vision, and we've got the drive to get it done.
And do you have the money to get it done? And I say that because the cost of a seat today in the U.S. Senate is over $11 million these days.
Well, I'll tell you this, we're certain that we will have the resources effectively to get our message out there. But you're touching on something that is really vital to our democracy. You know, as a senator, I'm going to be a voice for trying to push the money out of our politics. You know, it's too much money drowning the public interest, and we need to take that on. In this race, though, because so many people have joined our team, we will have the resources to get our message out and to help the public understand the critical choice that's involved here, a choice between a bright future that's promising for everybody. That's what we're going to deliver, and I think we'll have the resources and team to bring people along in enthusiasm to get that done.
All right. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Patty, thanks for the chance and the opportunity. I really appreciated it.
That was Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate Katie McGinty, former Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection under Ed Rendell. Most recently, she was Chief of Staff to Governor Tom Wolf. Democrats see beating incumbent Republican Pat Toomey as a key to retaking control of the Senate. Her Democratic challengers in the April 26 primary are Joe Sestak, John Fetterman, and Joe Vaudvarka. Interviews with all of the candidates will air over the next several weeks and will be posted to our website at wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.